You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 18 July, Mandela Day. We also have a rate announcement from MPC, 3 o'clock this afternoon. No change expected. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Lonwabo Mqabela from Perpetua Investment Managers. Commodities and what he's seeing so far year to date, a bit of a mixed bag. Sipisihle Zwani from Alan Gray, the investment case for Disney, but also succession around Bob Iger. They tried to succeed him before and it failed. And then we're chatting with Discovery around life policies that pay out in US dollars. I'd never heard of these before. Let's dig in and let's see. I mean, are they for everyone or are they for the seriously rich? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Mpumalanga gets massive 25 billion rand. Seriti Renewable Energy Project will be largest of its kind in SA, supplying 75% of the power needs of the coal mines and supplying 500,000 households. Bloomberg US floats tougher trade rules to rein in China chip industry. ASML down 11% and NVIDIA down 6.5%. Morning markets. US was red, S&P down 1.4%, NASDAQ off 2.9%. Over in the East, it is mixed. Sydney's up 0.5%, Tokyo down 2%, Hong Kong up 0.2% and Tencent off 0.6%. Commodities mixed. Gold, 2,471, all-time highs there. Brent, 85.39. And on the red, platinum, 1,011. Palladium, 955. Rand, 18.20. Bitcoin, 64,800. And top 40 opening call, 30 points to the down. That's 0.05% red.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Lonwabo Mqabela from Perpetua Investment Managers. Lonwabo, appreciate the early morning. Commodities, I mentioned there in the intro, we've got gold at all-time highs, but it's been a mixed bag across the commodity space. Some doing great, some muddling along, some doing poorly. What are you and your team seeing so far year-to-date in the area?
Yeah. Good morning, Simon. Yes, and good morning to the listeners. I mean, and you're quite right. I mean, it's been a very divergent outcome. So it used to be, you know, in commodities that they were a lot more synchronized. And we think because of a breakdown in really the Chinese growth story or the single common driver, you've seen a lot more divergence in performance. You know, so you mentioned the precious metals. Like gold up 20% year to date, platinum flat, palladium down 14%. Even amongst the commodities exposed to the electrification story, copper's up 12.5%, nickel is flat. You know, lithium iron is down 70+ over the past year. You know, so really the underlying fundamentals seem to matter a lot more than they used to. I'd probably say our second observation is that. You know, the good times are not as good as they used to be, you know, and I guess in this case, we're using iron ore as the proxy, primarily because iron ore contributes half the earnings of the diversified miners. And I'll say since, again, the slowing of the Chinese property market, it seems, you know, you're not seeing those days of $180, $200 plus. It seems to be peaking at lower highs each time, and it's currently at around 110, down some 25%. Year to date, so good times not as good as they used to. I'd probably say the same for oil as well. It definitely seems to be stuck in a range, you know, kind of $75 to $85 dollars a barrel. Again, the good days of $100 plus seem to be long gone.
But carry on.
No, we can.
I was going to say, and I particularly like your point around China, because commodities, I mean, you're right, and I hadn't really thought about it before, but they kind of moved as a single block. And I'm thinking particularly 20-odd years ago, we had that massive commodity run, and it was everything. Absent of China, the different commodities almost run on their own steam to a degree, rather than having a central big driver. And that has all sorts of implications, particularly, as you point out, for the diversifieds.
No, yeah, and that's correct. I mean, even what's interesting is that now when you go down a layer, is that even amongst the companies, you've seen very divergent performances, you know. So, you know, even amongst the precious metals, Anglo Gold is up 50% year to date. Goldfields 11. Amongst the precious metals, PGMs, Northam down 9. You know, Amplats down 37, Implats flat. You know, so increasingly we think that we are finding that the fundamental underlying story per commodity, per company, has become much more important than we'd say the history was the case.
I take your point. Back in the olden days, perhaps we could just say, you know, gold is running, and you could pick a miner. It didn't matter which one. Ditto with the PGMs, etc. Is commodities broadly a sector that you and your colleagues are investing into, or are you taking a more cautious, hands off approach?
Yeah, so it's definitely more of a case by case story. Mm-hmm. You know, and I guess that's our central message really, is that the underlying fundamentals matter more. So it's definitely case by case. We don't have a broad theme. I mean, broad theme-wise, I'd probably say if one is worried about a global slowdown and commodities will have their fair share of declines coming in the future. So we are invested. We can find companies, you know, but we're not particularly overweight the sector or anything. There are opportunities where some commodities are losing, you know, nearly half the industry is losing money. So that's true for the PGMs, and it's also true for chemicals, which is why SAS is under a lot of pressure. So also thinking about how those might evolve going forward is quite key for us.
Yeah, and that Sasol's got an ugly chart. We'll leave it there. Lonwabang Nakabela, Perpetua Investment Managers, appreciate the early morning.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Sipisihle Zwane, portfolio manager at Allan Gray. Sipisihle, I appreciate the time today. Talking Disney, and as I'm prepping for this interview, I'm thinking to myself, they have some of the strongest sort of entertainment IP of any business. I mean, it goes all the way back to, of course, Mickey Mouse and Co. and forward into today, where they still have really strong entertainment IP.
Of course, Simon. Hi to you first. Hi to all your listeners. It's actually amazing how much IP they've been able to create over their 100-year history. But not just created, they've also bought things really well. So some of the things that they have in their portfolio, they own Marvel, things like Star Wars, they own Avatar as well. So in reality, it's a business that's in the business of creating and purchasing IP or intellectual property, and then monetizing that different formats. And through time, they've monetized that in a very wide range of formats. I mean, from comic books, to movies, to series. It's actually an incredible business when it comes to creating worlds and characters.
And it's evolving because, you know, over the 100 years, of course, entertainment is different. I mean, the concept remains the same, but the rides are different. Of course, they've also brought on their streaming, Disney Plus. That's been, maybe we could say, struggling, although, I mean, that's a relative term. I mean, they've got a couple of 100 million subscribers there. That is not insignificant either.
Yeah. The difficulty with streaming is that, I mean, we saw it in the COVID times, right? So everyone threw all their resources, all the traditional media houses threw their resources in trying to catch up to Netflix. And the world changed, right? So people view sort of fast-growing, loss-making companies differently to what they were viewing them before. And I think the difference now in the streaming industry is everyone's trying to look at a route to profitability. So everyone's focusing on price increases and increasing ad tiers, so giving people options of having ads in their viewing, and things like reducing content spend or being more clever around content spend, being open to licensing content again, and to move those businesses into profitability. So it's a big change from the sort of subscriber land grab initially. The uniqueness of Disney is in the US, where people have 3 to 4 different streaming platforms, they have unique content, right? So if you're a Star Wars fan, there's nowhere else you're going to get Star Wars. So they call it, it's like their flagship tentpole content. So it's a new world and universe, and you can create a lot of different content around that. And because it's so unique, in a bundle of different streaming platforms, you'd have Netflix plus Disney, you know, for example.
Yeah.
I think that's a big differentiator of their business.
And they've also, and it's been a strategy, and it's probably been a strategy over the 100 years. They really focus on quality. They could put out a lot more around any of their IP products, but for them, it really is around quality and around sort of, you know, the big box office numbers.
There's been a time where people have been a bit worried about the volume of releases. So there used to be a Marvel movie every six months at some point. And I guess they all did reasonably well, but started to fall off towards the end. And I guess there's a limit on how much capacity the sort of studio executives have to actually be able to make high quality content. And the focus now has been to return back to quality over quantity. I mean, this year so far, the big movies have done quite well. So I haven't got a chance to watch it yet, but Inside Out 2 is the best performing movie in box office at the moment, the only one to reach $1 billion. And then Planet of the Apes, the new one, also did quite well. I think it's in the top 10 of a box office movie. So it's been a good year for the box office so far. I'm actually looking really forward to watching Inside Out 2. I hear from a lot of friends of mine who are parents that it's maybe it's both for parents and kids, you know, which is the perfect place that Disney used to play in back in the day.
And that is often what Disney is, and that brings the parks in, because I've never been to a Disney park, but people who I know who have been say you are completely unprepared for that experience. And of course, the pandemic took it out at the knees, but they really have come back, and they get huge spend, and it's almost, it's an institution in the US, and they've got in Japan, they've got in France. These are big business as well on their own.
I've been lucky enough to go to one of them, and it actually literally feels like the happiest place in the world. Like, incredibly excited, jumping up and down, going everywhere. Queues are long, but there's ways around that if you use their platforms to figure out where the queues are long and the waiting times. And these things are like, it's an amazing experience, right? So in a world where people are very happy to spend more on experiences versus material things, these things are like amazing memories that you have. And at 6 p.m. when everyone's waiting for that, there's a walk where all the characters come on and everyone waits for them on the main road. It's amazing when you see this princess is making eye contact with the kids and you realize that they're going to remember this for the rest of their lives. So it's a business that probably their most efficient or their most tangible way of monetizing these characters that they created. And it is literally a happiness machine for both the parents and adults and kids. So I think it's an incredible business and it's worth a lot.
A happiness machine. I take your point on that. A last question is, they had some CEO issues. Bob Iger is back in the hot seat. He is off in 2026, so 2 years away. What lies ahead? I mean, the succession plan last time didn't go very well and hence they brought him back.
I think it's the difficulty of having iconic CEOs who've like been incredibly influential on the business. And it's a huge business in terms of sort of the touch points it has, right? It operates in China, it operates in the US, operates in Japan. So it's a very difficult seat to fill. One thing that we are a bit more comfortable on now is that I think if you mess up once, you become very nervous and cautious about how you go about it in the future. And they've built a board that has done succession planning in different businesses as well. So you have a guy who did it at Nike, you have the guy who did it at Morgan Stanley. And so these are very strong board members who are thinking about this thing very, very carefully and realize that they messed it up one time, so they can't do it again. But I think it's very big shoes to fill. So you almost don't expect the next guy to do as well straight away. And it takes a while to become, you know, this iconic sort of CEO. But it's a business that's, you know, they've had another big CEO before Bob Iger. So, you know, you do find people and sometimes we associate a business with individuals. But in reality, this is a 100-year-old business that's been creating strong IP through different management teams. You had a big CEO, you had a massive founder who was larger than life in his own time. So they've done well over time. And I think it's, you get it wrong one time, you hope you don't get it wrong again. So yeah, we wait for that eagerly and see how they'll navigate those changes.
That's a great point. We're talking about it. Make no mistake, the board is talking about it a lot more than we are. And as to your point there, they've picked up some experts in that space. We leave it there. Sipisele Zwane, Portfolio Manager Alan Gray, appreciate the time. That's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter. Is Disney a good investment? I mean, the Bob Iger, they absolutely messed it up. And I like the point made there that it's big shoes to fill and it's a big operation to run. Will they get it right this time? I think they probably will. So, question, good investment or not? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Kashmir Kanji, Head of Market Analytics and R&D at Discovery. Kashmir, appreciate the time today. Dollar life policies. I have to say, I hadn't heard of these, but on the announcement Discovery made yesterday, been around for a decade now and gaining popularity. And they are, as they say in the sticker, it's a life policy, but it'll pay out in US dollars rather than rands.
That's correct, Simon. I think it's incredibly interesting that it's not mainstream. And I wonder why sometimes when we consider the potentials of investing offshore and diversifying our wealth offshore, etc., it's not commonplace for someone to think about protecting their wealth in an offshore context. And, you know, as much as there is a lack of awareness around it, we actually have noticed a growing number of clients actually considering a policy like this. So, you know, conversations like ours now will naturally create the awareness. But what we've seen over the last 10 years is that we've got nearly 1,200 advisors considering a dollar life policy as part of their client's risk protection plan. And these clients would typically then hold 40% of their cover in hard currency, like the US dollar, and 60% in rands. So it doesn't mean that the rand policy is suddenly irrelevant. Yeah. It just means that there's a diversification mindset when it comes to risk planning.
Yeah, I mean, we are absolutely global citizens these days. I mean, we might not be leaving South Africa, but we've got investments and the like around the world. These premiums, am I using my offshore money already? In other words, I've got dollars offshore, or could I use my annual allowance and pay premiums from rands in South Africa?
That's a brilliant question, because the product is designed to allow flexibility to do either or. So if you have a rand-based bank account and you reside in South Africa, you're a tax resident of South Africa, you can use your single discretionary allowance to fund this policy, mm-hmm. where your premium will be billed effectively in rands, immediately converted via our Guernsey branch, and then your payout is through the net when that happens and paid in US dollars. The alternative is if you have a bank account offshore and you'd like to fund for it from that bank account, then you can do that as well. So there's complete flexibility in terms of how you'd like to fund for this policy.
And I imagine when it pays out eventually, it will be the same. I could have it into a dollar-denominated offshore account, or I could have it into a ZAR-denominated local account.
That's a good question. Actually, no. So the payout is slightly different. The way the policy has been structured is that the payout should be made into an offshore account in order to remain, you know, sort of within the constructs of the policy, the way the taxes work and the estate duties work and those sorts of efficiencies. It is preferred for the policy to pay out then into an offshore account, especially seeing as the client has used their single discretionary allowance. If you are able to, you're able to bring the money back to South Africa if the need arises. But ideally, the policy should be paid into an offshore bank account. Yeah. And that's what we almost insist on.
And if you want the money in ZAR, you can then do the transfer yourself. I've been assuming dollars. These are dollar-denominated policies.
Correct. This is a US dollar denominated policy. However, and that's a good point for me to maybe address, we recognize that, you know, clients are not only considering the United States. Mm. There's possibilities of, as you've highlighted, being a global citizen. So, you know, if your considerations are to retire in an Italian countryside, you know, what you need is to match whatever currency it is, then you would actually need your offshore account to be based there. And this policy would then pay into that offshore account. If you're in the UK, pays out into a UK account and would just be converted at that point.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. And retiring in the Italian countryside is exactly on my agenda. A last question. And again, I'm not sure. Is this for the high net worth individuals, or is this for the man or woman in the street as well? I mean, what sort of premiums do we start with?
You know, that was a fascinating insight. And we've taken 10 years to learn about how, you know, the consumer behavior on this type of policy. And in designing it, our mindset was probably that this is for a niche group of people who, you know, possibly high net worth, are considering eventually leaving the country. And what we've learned over time is that it actually isn't. You know, we've created a minimum entry point of $50 for this policy, which is about 900 rand. Mm-hmm. And what that has meant for many South Africans is that even if they're just considering diversification without any considerations of leaving the country, that then hedges the buying power of the life insurance payout. And so we've seen many, many clients actually using it that way. And as I said up front, many clients consider then both a rand denominated and a a dollar-based life insurance policy with us.
Yeah, I take your point. And for some folks, they might have investments, but they're South African, and this is essentially a currency hedge on your life policy. We'll leave it there. That's Kashmira Kanji, Head of Market Analytics, R&D Discovery. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Hannah de Nobrega yesterday from Prescient Investment Management. Will the Saab cut rates was our question. When do you expect it? Over half of you said September, maybe. And that does seem to be where everyone's convalescing. 20% said only November, with another 20% saying next year only. The rest were saying hopefully it'll happen today. And that seems off the table, but we'll find out. 3 o'clock. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.